Hi everyone, I'm Gary Null. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Our theme today, the story that we are not discussing concerning COVID and the consequences of the misbegotten and completely ill-thought-out-of strategy of how to deal with it. From Israel is Dr. Jessica Rose. She is an immunologist, a molecular biologist, and she specialized in computational biology and the biomechanisms behind pathogenic infections. Her research and publications including investigating hepatitis B, cytomegalovirus, HIV, and anthrax. She's a graduate of the University of Newfoundland and Labrador, and she received a doctorate from Bar Ilam University in Israel. She's written or co-authored several important scientific papers analyzing the data of COVID-19 vaccine injuries and deaths reported in the Centers for Disease Control Vaccine Adverse Events Reporting System, or VAERS. She also has a paper pending publication co-authored with Dr. Peter McCullough, who will be a guest on this program on Friday. She is also a national surfing champion in Israel for women's longboard surfing. She blogs on her site at jessica.substack.com. Nice to have you with us again, Jessica.
Thanks for having me. It's jessicar.substack.com. Don't forget that little R.
Okay.
Thanks for having me again.
Good. During our previous conversations, we have focused primarily on the safety of vaccines. And this is where the majority of the debate and controversy has been. However, there's also the collateral damage to society and the health that individuals that gets much less attention, the consequences of lockdowns, isolation, the psychological impact of masks, especially in schools. There's been also the authoritarian tactics used by governments to get their populations to comply with pandemic rules, and we see the human cost of these actions in psychological abuse, stress, loss of jobs, rise in alcohol and drug abuse, obesity, suicides, and that's just here in the United States. This is a real consideration. What is the benefit to risk ratio? And in the United States, corporations and the governmental agencies seem to think that the benefit to the person is guaranteed as long as the government and corporations say it's safe and effective. Almost no one is questioning that. You have. If you would take your time, please, and address this in the context of the severity of the SARS virus itself. And what would have happened had we not known that there was a virus? What if we didn't do all the tests, which turned out to be false negative, most of them? And what if we did not isolate people in their homes, but as normally would happen when someone has a symptom, they go to a doctor, the doctor diagnoses the symptom, does a series of tests, determines what the person's problem is, and immediately starts to treat it. What would have been different? I realize these are subjective, but at least give us your input on this. The forum is yours.
Well, to go backwards, on the subject of the testing, I mean, in my opinion, this isn't a pandemic of a virus, this has been a pandemic of testing. And if they hadn't gone completely insane in their policy management of this entire debacle, and not done this excessive, strange, ineffective testing, and I can tell you why I think it's ineffective. Well, I don't think it is, it was, then no one would have known about this. Most people probably would have thought they had the flu. There might have been some reports of strange pneumonia-like symptoms, but they probably would have been diagnosed as pneumonia. So my take on this, and it was 2 years ago as well, was that it would have just burned through the human population and nobody would have known any better. I might be wrong on that, but that's what I think. And the words safe and effective have meaning. And I think this is another thing that a lot of people have lost touch with, the meaning in words and how important it is to be precise in your language. safe and effective. Think about those two words, because I did, and I think a lot of my colleagues do as well. That means that, let's just say we're talking about a vaccine. If a vaccine is safe, then it's not going to hurt you when you take it. The side effects are going to be such that they're going to be rare, like very rare, unless you have some kind of also rare condition, or say you're allergic to polyethylene glycol or something. And you probably won't even notice that you've had the injections, except for perhaps some symptoms related to the immune response that's invoked, like a fever, for example, or injection site pain. Nothing more should happen. And effective means that you will generate the appropriate immune responses and have positive efficacy, which means that those antibody responses and those T cell responses, those focused responses, will have been generated such that when you meet a sister or a brother version of, say, a virus, the challenge virus, the natural variant, let's say, then you won't even know that you've met it, because your immune responses will be so fast, because they're so specific from the memory cells that have formed, that you'll be fine. You probably won't even know that you were challenged. Like I said, those will be effective and robust. And in many cases, typically with vaccination, you don't even need to get a booster. Now, that's going to depend. Some viruses do require boosters because of waning antibody pools, for example. So if you look at these two words and you dive into the data or the peer-reviewed journals or adverse event data, what you're going to find, and this isn't rhetoric, it's not opinion, this is what we have discovered because we're looking in the data. And from working on the bench and asking experimental questions and getting answers, you will find that these products are absolutely not efficacious. And there's a good reason for that. They're actually being called negatively efficacious right now, which means not only are they not providing protective immunity for you, they're damaging you. They're actually making you more susceptible, and we don't know exactly why yet, to other pathogens. Some people are calling this VAIDS, vaccine-induced AIDS, and I'm not sure that that's not an absolutely real or appropriate way to call this. They're not efficacious. They're not providing long-lasting or even short-duration protective immunity anymore. And most likely the reason for that is because the mRNA that's encoding the modified spike protein is from the original strain. I'm not sure, but this is the ongoing notion. And as for safety, the safety profile of these products is looking horrendous, if you ask me. Based on Pfizer and Moderna's own clinical trial data, that both of those documents, or some of those documents, have been released. And based on adverse event data collection systems all over the world, which they really have nothing to do with each other, they're distinct populations, and they're saying the same things internally. Millions, literally, of reports of adverse events in the context of the COVID-19 products, which has never been seen before. It's completely atypical. And when you're talking about pharmacovigilance, that's what these data collection systems are in terms of adverse events. When you're talking about that, these are designed to allow the detection of safety signals in the form of excessive adverse event reports or rare adverse event reports, so that we can go back and check whether or not there's a connection between, say, a product and the adverse event itself. This is the process. This is what we've always done. And based on the sheer absolute numbers of adverse events that are severe alone, this should have been done. We should have done a causality assessment for death. rapidly, because it's, come on, it's been over a year. What the hell is taking so long? Myocarditis, thrombotic event, you name it. I mean, there are over 10,000 different types of adverse events in VAERS alone right now, which is another excessively atypical condition right now. And it's also, I mean, it indicates with certainty, in my opinion, that there is something very wrong with the safety profile of these products. And I've recently penned a Substack article providing the reason why, with numbers, this is not due to excessive amounts of doses being doled out in the United States. It's not that at all. It doesn't explain the discrepancy between the number of adverse events reported, say, for all the flu vaccines combined. There are 14 different types on the market, and what we're seeing with just three COVID products. There's no comparison. So to summarize my answer, think about what safe and efficacious or efficacy means to you as an individual. And perhaps if you're not concerned already, get a little bit concerned, because it is my opinion that the regulatory bodies, the stopgap mechanism that's supposed to be providing us with warnings to protect us from, say, a dangerous product produced by a pharmaceutical company like thalidomide, they're not functioning. Because if they were functioning the way that they always have in the past, like they have in the past, more or less, these products would have been, the rollout would have stopped last January based on the number of deaths. That's what I've seen so far in my assessment.
Okay, I appreciate your statements. Right now, I believe we have to take an honest look at the organizations and the media providing us with the answers. Because if you lie about one thing over here, what is the probability you're willing to lie about something else over here?
Mm-hmm.
You mentioned that these organizations have historically been the canary in the coal mine. If there was something seriously wrong, they would have told us. In this regard, and only and with some serendipity, I took a look back over 100 years at all the major public health crises, and the very agencies, including the CDC and the FDA, U.S. Public Health Service, the National Cancer Institute, as examples that were supposed to say, hold on a second, precautionary principle, first, let us prove that this product or service does no harm, has never been in place in an honest way. I don't... Wow. Believe that the agencies are not doing their job. I believe that they are meticulous and perfect in doing their job. I believe that there is at the highest level of integrity at the FDA, the CDC, Anthony Fauci's National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Disease, except it's for the corporations, not us. So give them the credit they deserve. It takes a unique type of arrogance, almost the historical arrogance of kings who felt they could do anything and get away with it because they can. Examples. In the 1940s and 50s, it was not uncommon to see trucks going through suburban areas and spraying up and down the streets whole fogs of DDT. Right. Children would run out and be covered in this. The mothers thought that it was a good thing.
Yay! Right?
And also asbestos was used in all the ships and major buildings. The Native Americans were primary in the servicing of the nuclear industry through the Manhattan Project and afterwards of mining the uranium mines. And these were the mm-hmm. Navajo. Mm-hmm. They later would come down with cancers, mm-hmm. yet they were told it was safe. Asbestos, safe. Thalidomide originally was safe. tobacco smoke was safe. In fact, in the FDA, they actually had the formulas, the patents, and they knew that it would cause addiction, and they knew that it would lead to lung cancer and emphysema. They protected the interest of the seven major tobacco industries. As a result, the AMA came out with full-page ads showing doctors in white coat and stethoscopes, Lucky Strikes, Marlboros, Chesterfields, all the different tobaccos, and why you should smoke them. They were good for you. They soothe the throat. Now, one ad alone had over 36,000 doctors saying that they smoke Lucky Strikes. If you're an average doctor, and that's where you get a lot of your information, and you read the Journal of the American Medical Association because you're a member, then you're going to believe that they would not lie. They would not put the tobacco interest profit ahead of public safety, because you're not dealing with a few people. You're dealing with upwards of one-third to one-half the American population, adult population, smoking. Mm-hmm. Now, those are also irradiating our food, mammography, living around nuclear power plants. Dr. Chester Stock, who was one of America's leading MD-PhDs with a specialization in nuclear medicine, and Dr. Jay Gould, a scientist who was in the original environmental oversight group on nuclear radiation under Jimmy Carter, and I wrote a scientific paper on what actually happened at Three Mile Island. If you remember Three Mile Island, we were told there were no fatalities. We actually got all of the local hospitals in the downwind and saw that there were 50,000 babies that died. Now, interesting, because the moment we published our paper, every single one of those things were scrubbed. You could no longer find any of these statistics, but we had captured them prior to that. So look at all the major issues for food preservatives, the amount of sugar in the diet. The sugar industry was paying to make it look like it was fat, not sugar, that was causing diabetes and obesity. So virtually everywhere you look, glyphosate, that is on Roundup, that is virtually found in every human body in the United States, even those eating organic, because an organic field here, glyphosate sprayed here, the wind carries it over, and we're exposed. So I can't think of a single incident when the government took the initiative to prevent something in the first place and then was the first to recall it in the second place. Almost always it's just the opposite. It is not someone in the government. It is someone outside the government that brings it to our attention. So I think that what is happening is that we are being exposed to the side effects of these vaccines. And like always, the media is looking at where 85% of its profit comes from, and it's from pharmaceuticals. And the very company that makes the vaccines is making all the other drugs. And therefore, they're protecting them. And even when they've lied. Now, mind you, the same media lied about Russian interference in our election for 4 years, even though there were four official investigations that found no proof of that. They lied. The same people lied about Hunter Biden's laptop. Now, I don't care about Hunter Biden. I don't care about his crack. I don't care about his using drugs and prostitutes. That's irrelevant. That's his private business. You know, if he wants to be that, that's his choice. What I do care about is the Hunter Biden laptops, which they also denied, emphatically attacked as being a right-wing conspiracy. Well, it turns out the New York Times had to acknowledge that it was real, wasn't fake. But now they haven't gone in to say what is in there that could have compromised Joe Biden's career if it were known before the election. So they lied again. Now they're lying about how we got it, this whole crisis, this bloodshed in Ukraine, because they don't tell about Gloria Nuland, who's Undersecretary of State on and dealing with Ukraine and has been one of the leading neocons pushing to destroy Russia and in the process pushing NATO up against there. Now, that does not in any way, shape, or form justify what Putin has done. Those are crimes against humanity. So where I deplore what has happened and the suffering that has happened, Now, at least in the proper, honest context, I know why it happened and who was responsible, and not one single media, not one iota of truth in any of the American media, from Democracy Now! To the New York Times, from the Washington Post, NBC, we haven't had a single honest story about how did we get here? Did this have to happen? Could this have been prevented? And the answer is yes, we know how it got there, and we know it could have been prevented. Similarly, these are the same people who've been guiding us on everything COVID. So please, I'm sorry for that extensive explanation, but please go back in retrospect during the past 2 years and tell us what was done wrong and how the media promoting what was done wrong had kept it legitimate in the eyes of the public.
Well, it's still ongoing. I mean, there's nothing past tense about any of this. And I mean, the whole thing is bogus in my eyes. It's fraud left, right, and center. And it's very clear to the people who are looking. I 2 years ago when I started scratching my head thinking something doesn't seem right here, like why is authoritarianism rolling out like like something no one's ever seen before because of a virus? I mean, maybe it's because I do what I do that I know that that's an inappropriate mode of action, but I mean, the first thing that I said when I still considered that this was a zoonotic pathogen that was dangerous, which is, what they originally had said. They said, there was a crossover event and, humans, don't have immunity to this and it could be really bad and it could ravage our species. So I thought, well, if this comes down to sensible measures, then we should come up with a good way to detect antibody responses so that we can know who's got natural immunity. And so, we can actually then identify with good science who the vulnerable populations are, perhaps the elderly and the autoimmune, or the immune compromised people, this kind of thing. And then take an action appropriately to protect those populations. The media, they're just like the people who are just doing their job on the worst kind of scale you can think of. They're the worst. They're almost as bad as anybody in this whole thing, because that's where most people get their information from. And of course, they're getting dictates as well, but they don't have to follow those dictates. Those organizations, like, I won't name a particular one, but they're also run by individuals, and those individuals can make a decision every day to do the right thing or to completely screw everyone over. You have to know the difference by now. You have to have heard something. You have to have heard, that your next door neighbor who's less than 40 suffered a massive heart attack for no reason. You have to have heard stuff by now. It's too, the data, the stories, I hate this expression, but the alternative news, the information is so excessive now that contains truth. There's no excuse for anyone not to know, or at least not to be asking questions right now about how we got here and how wrong it is that we got here. It's wrong. I mean, I know that's a moralistic term, but it absolutely is, because it was all by design, I think. It was by design that they imposed these ridiculous lockdowns on us. I mean, What the hell good did that do? It did no good. And on the flip side, it destroyed far more lives that have been destroyed from COVID, if you ask me. The people who've lost their livelihoods, their lives, opportunities, homes. It's ridiculous that anyone would still believe that all of that destruction needed to happen to protect who from what now? I mean, seriously, come on, people. Edward Dowd recently came out and he made a statement that the millennials of the United States have suffered a Vietnam-like war in terms of mortality, because there's actually, and I checked this, there's an 84% rise in excess mortality in the millennial age group, which is 25 to 44 year olds, in the fall of last year, and nobody knows why. So some people think it's suicide, some people think it's opioid crisis, some people think it's cancer, some people think it's from the injections. It's probably a massive melange of all of these things, but it's like, nonetheless, all of this destruction and the devastation that's ensuing has nothing to do with a virus. It's very obvious what it has to do with. It has to do with the inflicted damage, mandated damage done on human beings for no sensible reason that I can think of. Antibody tests should have been deployed right away. These PCR things were bullshit, pardon my language. They're 95% false positive rate. The cutoff value they were telling techs to use to even run a PCR was 45 cycles, which, as anyone who run a PCR test before knows, or run PCR machine before knows, is absolutely bonkers too high. You should stop somewhere between 20 and 30 cycles, something like that, in order so you don't get ridiculous background noise. Lockdowns, bullshit, never should have happened. They did nothing except destroy people's lives. Restricting movement, not letting people go within 100 meters of their homes. Why? Tell me why that has anything to do with something other than controlling human beings. Doesn't have anything to do with safety. It never did. It never, that should never have made sense to anyone, let alone made sense to so many people, to the extent that everybody listened. Everyone just should have put their middle fingers up in the air and said, I'm not doing that. I kind of have an idea that if this was back in the 80s, that's what people would have done. I don't know. I loved the 80s. I think it was the best time to be alive. So now I'm kind of rambling on with my answer, but I think everything was done wrong.
Let's take one aspect. Jessica, would there have been any justification to call this a pandemic, let alone an epidemic, if they had not included an enormous percentage of people who died, but died of other cofactors, comorbidities, that they would have died of in any case, especially those in nursing homes, assisted living centers, even in hospice care where people were there with terminal cancer when they died, they were called COVID. And when you take out all those individuals, then you don't have a pandemic, you don't have an epidemic. You have normal fatality, a very bad flu season in statistics, but that's how they kept it alive, lying about who had died from what.
That's right. And just recently, I mean, it wasn't even a week ago, Walensky came out and said that, a huge percentage of the deaths across all age groups was reduced pertaining to COVID deaths that were documented because of what she called it coding error. This is a huge deal. And it's just something that's, the director of the CDC says in passing, it's a huge deal because of what you just said. It fanned the flames of this whole panic attack that the world had, because we were supposed to be afraid and we're still supposed to be afraid. Everyone's dying. It's like, no, apparently this many people died. And by this many, it's a far, far, far smaller number than anybody has quoted from the beginning. And that's not surprising to anyone who's looking, because, people were incentivized to write down a death as a COVID death because they got money for it. That's the simple truth. That's not rhetoric. That's not opinion. That's what happened. You can ask people who are on the ground you know, if that happened to them, and they will say yes, they'll probably say yes quietly because everyone's afraid to get messed with. But it's the case rate and the death rate, both of these numbers, I have absolutely not gone near because I don't trust either of them. I think they're both BS because the case rate is based on the PCRs, rates and positive rates or whatever. And the deaths are based on, you know, assessments where coding error is prevalent. Their words, not mine.
Another word that they said was that you had to have the PCR test, but then the CDC abandoned that test at the end of December and January of this year. Now think of that for a moment. That meant that the hundreds of millions of tests just here in the United States, I had to have one every time I flew to make sure the airlines, you know, wouldn't stop you. In any case, there was no follow-up that I could find in any of the media saying, well, hold on a second. You just declared this a pandemic based upon how many people were infected, and then the New York Times used the word case for a positive PCR instead of a person that had actual symptoms. Mm-hmm. You don't become a case until you have some form of symptoms that can be properly diagnosed. No symptoms. You still got, if you got a positive PCR, you were a case. That then fueled the funding. It fueled all the mandates. So I believe that one of the real scandals to get exposed is why so much energy and funding went into the RNA vaccines rather than traditional attenuated virus and protein-based vaccines. And even Pfizer's CEO, Albert Bourla, had something to say, I believe in it, that this is fairly accurate. He said it was counterintuitive, meaning he was referring to Pfizer putting all of its eggs into a basket of RNA gene therapy to develop COVID vaccine. It was counterintuitive because Pfizer was mastering, or let's say we had a very good experience and expertise with multiple technologies that could give a vaccine. RNA was the technology that we had less experience with, only 2 years working with it. And actually RNA was a technology that had never delivered a single product until that day, meaning the day that the FDA gave emergency use approval, no vaccine, not any other medicine. So it was very counterintuitive, end quote. Now, keep in mind that the FDA would not allow an emergency use authorization if it were shown that any other therapy could do the same thing as a vaccine to help. Well, the scientific evidence was already there in peer-reviewed journals, not many at the time, but growing number, that other medications, including monoclonal antibodies, the steroid therapies, and some over 22 different drugs, ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and they said that there was no evidence. Well, Fauci said, and U.S. The U.S. Public Health Service said, what's his name, Francis, that don't do anything. Just stay at home until you have to go to the hospital. Well, my goodness, that is counterintuitive. Every doctor in the world.
Lips have to be blue.
Had blue lip. Every doctor in the world knows that you start treating a patient the moment you see symptoms. So by not allowing anyone to be treated and only allowing one very toxic drug to be used that Fauci promoted, that then all these other therapies that would have negated the vaccine altogether, all this was hidden. I believe this constitutes a crime against humanity. I believe it was intentional, and I believe that those responsible should be held accountable. And if the insurance companies who are behind supporting all this, because someone has to pay the bills, right? Mm-hmm. If they find, or the U.S. government finds, they gave a indemnification Bill Gates and all these other manufacturers and people, that they lied or withheld information that was important, that then all that indemnification could be stripped away. They can be made vulnerable to be sued. And I believe ultimately this is where this will come down to. Your thoughts on that, please.
Yeah, I completely agree. And And I still believe in the good of people. I still believe that even people who do bad things can end up doing good. I really, really believe that. I wouldn't be doing that if I didn't think that. So there are people who have acted proactively, malevolently in this you know, nightmare that we've all been forced to live for the last 2 years and 3 months now. We need to suss out exactly who those people are, if they are people or if they're corporations, I don't know, and hold them accountable. And I think, you know, there's no other word to describe what happened here but fraud. Like the steps that were skipped along the way are so manifold here. The part that really bothers me as a biologist is, and this comes back to what you were saying about the kings, the arrogant, tyrannical kings. You can be arrogant, you know, in the financial world, and I think you probably have to be in that world. You can be arrogant in certain worlds, but if you're arrogant in biology, especially when you're talking about developing new tech, like gene therapy-based tech, that's really dangerous for humanity. And that sounds dramatic, but it's anybody who's studied genetics, I'm not a geneticist, but of course I know a little bit about genetics. Anybody who studies dynamics or evolution of pathogens, viruses, species, anybody who studies balances in ecosystems, they would agree with using the precautionary principle, first of all, but also being what's that word, humble in your approach in science to approaching biology itself. I mean, it just seems so stupid to me that after so many millennia of evolution to what I would call perfect points. I mean, the fact that we're here at all is kind of a miracle, depending on what you believe. And I think it's pretty stupid to mess with the harmony that has been achieved and that is maintained on the global scale. I mean, the first thing they teach you when you start learning mathematical modeling is this model that includes hairs and lynxes, I think. It's the lynx hair model. Forgive me if I got the animals wrong. And they maintain this beautiful homeostatic balance in nature. Like, you know, they live in harmony. One you know, feeds off the other, and they're balanced in the system. If some outside force, for example, comes and imposes itself on that system and throws off the balance, then both can die out. That's a bad summary of the, you know, the what you learn, but I think you get my point. If you disrupt a harmonious system that's functioning, you could destroy the system. And I think that is not a far-fetched concern when you're talking about gene-based therapies in human beings right now. If it's done, I mean, this is the thing. I'm not saying it can't be done. I'm not saying that mRNA tech is bad. I'm not saying that at all. I think it's a genius idea, but I think it's been bastardized. And I think that in this particular case, they picked the absolute wrong protein, the spike protein. I think that, you know, that's when I start wondering, like, listen, the scientists that are working for these companies, they have to be smart. They have to be knowing, they have to know what they're doing. How is it that nobody along the way, I mean, maybe this is all part of the rigmarole. It's like there are probably numerous people saying, I don't think that's a good idea, and expressing concerns. But as you know, from all points that you can think of, if you express dissent or a contradictory or even a concern, even a question, you will be shut down. I mean, it's like I said, I mean, there are some situations where you can do that and the outcome won't be devastating, but this isn't that situation. I think whoever is doing this is playing with a kind of fire that they don't even understand. That would be my broadest opinion on that. I think that is arrogance beyond belief.
Let's take this a step further to the World Health Organization's treaty. As you know, treaties supersede any of the nation's sovereign laws. And this is being drafted as a way to prepare the international community to work more in lockstep in the event of a future pandemic. And I haven't read the treaty itself, only news announcements about it. But a few items stand out. First are the references for an international effort to combat misinformation. And of course, all of us who criticize the official narrative in any way, like right now in the conversation, would be accused of misinformation, the one we're having right now. And second, to have a more unified mechanism in place to get people vaccinated. And no doubt this will require vaccine passports, which I'm sure would be fully integrated into the cloud so vaccination status of people can be assessed across various countries. And third, there is a great deal of language in the treaty that refers to the world's loss of trust in not only the World Health Organization, but in national health institutions in general, and therefore the World Health Organization and governments need to rebuild that trust. I would only say that this kind of language has a lot in common with the language we hear from Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum, in particular the rollout of the Great Reset. So my suspicion is that this treaty is just one more goal of the Great Reset. Those are my perspectives. I would like to hear from you what you believe is behind this World Health Organization treaty and what its ultimate goal might be, considering that if you look backwards, you will see that the World Health Organization has been wrong on multiple occasions, that its leaders have been political hacks, including the current one that was selected primarily by China. And that if you go back to his reputation, he has no reputation, not a medical doctor.
Well, he has a bad reputation, actually.
Terrible reputation. So, but the media will not touch this. So I see this, especially when I'm seeing virtually every one of the organizations in America have now fact checkers. But it just is a coincidence that every one of the fact checking organizations, every one of the fact checkers have been wrong on every major issue. And yet they continue to be the ones that are called forth to tell us what is true. And the people like yourself and thousands of others who have found legitimate cause for concern, and in normal science, cause for concern allowed now has been shut down. Anyone, no matter what their background, no matter how accurate they are, will be attacked and then gaslit and then shadowed on the internet so that no one knows that they exist. The algorithms won't take you to their sites. And this is what's happening now. Your thoughts, please.
Yeah, I'm waiting for that to happen to me. It's called shadow banning, right?
Yes.
Yeah, so I think it's just the next step in the program. I think this whole thing is engineered. You just have to look. And once you see a certain number of things out of place, you can't not see what you saw type thing. I know that sounds a bit cryptic, but it's just odd that all of the countries have kind of been in a strange kind of lockstep for the last 2 years. And now, all of a sudden there's a treaty that would, put us under one global rule. And how, it's the automation of humans, the turning humans into the digital, digitizing humans. That's what I've been saying that the end game for this is about from the beginning. Monetizing humans, extracting their energy in whatever form that you want to. For now it's data to teach algorithms or whatever, or AIs, and I know that sounds a little sci-fi, but I think that's it. It doesn't make sense to do any of this otherwise. It just doesn't make any sense. I'm not sure what else I can say about that.
This isn't about
public health.
I'm going to ask Rodney in our New York studio to bring up and play for you a clip that was supposed to have been secret. Nobody was supposed to have recorded anything from a meeting with the Rockefeller brothers. And this was the last of the surviving Rockefeller original brothers. And he was controlling the banking part of it. He also founded the Council on Foreign Relations, among other groups. And this was a meeting where, I believe it was 1991, and he said at that time that in that meeting, he was thanking the New York Times, the Washington Post, and many other journalists who for 40 years had been coming to their meetings planning for a new world order. He says this, new world order, where they have total control. And therefore, their so-called best and brightest would put everything into motion. I want you to hear this, because it seems almost too conspiratorial. No one would actually say that. Yeah, he said it. And then ask yourself, why is it that no one in any of these organizations, not in the Davos Group, the Council on Foreign Relations, the Bilderbergs, the Trilateral Commission, you never hear any of them ever raising a criticism against the current status quo in anything. But let's play that clip now so you can hear it, and that will then address your question about how could all this be happening. People would know. The people in power know exactly what they're doing. It's just that their timetable took longer than what they anticipated. Yeah. All right. But we've got a few minutes and then we're at the end of our show. I want you to hear this before we go out.
You know what, just before we play it, I just want to make a comment at how stunned I am at how they don't even have to hide. They don't even use code words when they speak. They just come out and say, like Schwabi actually says out loud, that half of the parliament members in Canada are part of his little cult, his World Economic Forum group.
Yes.
I mean, that addresses
Trudeau,
the question.
And Angela Merkel and Barack Obama, among others, are part of his leadership when they were younger.
Yeah. Yes.
So they've already been indoctrinated. So they've been indoctrinated. Final thought before the clip. When you look at all of the great minds, the outstanding people with their reputations in science or medicine or both, who have gone on record and are now are being attacked, and we're not talking about a few or a few hundred, we're talking about virtually everyone, what does it tell you when not a single critic of the current establishment view, who are all pro-vaccine, by the way, all pro-Orthodox, not one is invited on to a public forum to debate the so-called critics. Not one.
Because they know they don't have data backing them up. I mean, Byron Bredel, who's a hero in Canada, a viral immunologist, has recently been in court proceedings, and he was allowed to actually release the transcript, his testimony versus the testimony of the so-called other side. And the reason why he wanted everyone to read it is because it's staggeringly alarming how they have nothing to support the impositions, the mandates, the testing. They have nothing to back them up. There's no science there. Those aren't words. That's a fact. We have the science behind us. And you know, a person pretending to be an immunologist can't debate an immunologist in public because the person pretending will be called out to be, you know, an imposter. It's that simple. And that's not good for the program.
Let's go to the clip.
1991 closed door meeting of fellow internationalists. Billionaire and former CFR chairman David Rockefeller praised his media allies, but his confidence that his words would not leave the room was later broken.
We are grateful to the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected their promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march toward a world government.
That these men aim to create a world system of financial control in private hands, able to dominate the political system of each country and the economy of the world as a whole.
David Rockefeller, I see Klaus Schwab going forward with David Rockefeller's plan, and the World Economic Forum is what they're promoting, as you said. They're not hiding anything. They're talking about chipping people. They're talking about control over people.
He has a book written, for Christ's sake.
Yeah. So this is where we're going.
You know what bothers me about this? This is another thing I think about often. If they had just been forthcoming about all of this stuff, like, you know, if they want to roll mRNA tech into the public, why don't they just be transparent about it? Because I'm absolutely sure that most people wouldn't have objected in the first place. And then at least they wouldn't have been caught being, you know, doing fraudulent things. You know, there are some people who would be right on board with having a one world government, but then there are a lot more who want nothing to do with that. So, you know, why can't the people who want that kind of existence just go off and do that and leave us the hell alone? That's what I want to know.
They're never going to leave us alone. They have to have complete compliance. This is the deep state. This is how they function. Thank you very much for being on today, Jessica. We appreciate it. Oh, and by the way, before we go, one last quick thing. What, to the best of your research, is the most current number of Americans who have died or been injured by this vaccine, or these vaccines?
Okay, so the latest count in bears, this refers only to the three COVID-19 injectable products administered to people in the States, which is the Moderna, the Pfizer, and the Janssen. The total number in the domestic data set, which are the reports that are filed by Americans living inside the United States, is 760,252. This is a conservative estimate because it does not account for the underreporting factor, which is one of the lamentable things about VAERS. Only a certain percentage of people are ever going to report an adverse event, even if they know that they've suffered one at the hands of these products. So this only represents a percentage of the total number of people. And deaths specifically, we are at 13,891 in the domestic data set. And if you combine that with the foreign data set, these are the reports filed to VAERS by American citizens outside of the United States and the surplus, we have almost 30,000, 29,481. So you also have to multiply that by some multiplication factor to account for the underreporting. It's a lot of people.
To the best of your knowledge, reporting that even conservatively, what would you put the range of death at?
Well, I calculated the underreporting factor for severe adverse events, for which death is one. But I always, I think that the underreporting factor for death is lower than that, because I think death is probably one of the adverse events that's not really underreported that much. So even if you divide that by six and you multiply, you know, if you consider the underreporting factor to be, say, five or six, you still get about 180,000 people dead from these products. So whether or not these products caused all of those deaths is not known, which is why we also need to be looking into that. If you think about that, and if we actually get access to a real number of people who have died from COVID in the United States, and then we compare that number to the number of people, we don't even need to do that, but if we did, that would be an interesting comparison. Nobody should be dying from products that are being promoted to save us from something or to promote health. No one should be dying, not one person.
Certainly not over 100,000, and yet the American media has refused to acknowledge how many people have actually died.
They won't even say that it's happening, let alone, like, not even the director of the CDC acknowledges.
My guest, Dr. Jessica Rose, her website is J-E-S-S-I-C-A-R, jessicar.substack.com. Until we speak again, have a nice day.
You too. I hope you have a great day too.
Thank you all for listening and watching. I'm Gary Knoll. Have a nice day.